Thank you, Mr. Martin. Boy, that was stirring, all those songs, wasn't it? Wow, you got me all stirred up, Mr. Martin. That's great. Appreciate that. Well, it happened again, being a speaker late on the schedule. Everyone that spoke before me has taken my scriptures. And I said, well, now what do I do? Just like Mr. Anderson the other night when he was in the same dilemma. Well, then we back up and we go back to our Spokesman's Club training. And we look at this and say, well, I'll talk about something. Well, it's good to have you all here. I enjoy this feast site. I enjoy the Feast of Tabernacles. I'm sure you do, too. And so today I'm going to talk about something that's dear to my heart, and I know it's probably dear to your heart as well, and especially to the younger people. The younger people, having four children at home many years ago, they're not young anymore. We used to talk about things in the kingdom, talk about God a lot. We had Bible studies and so forth, as you do too. But their favorite subject, of course, is what will we be like? So I am going to talk about in the world tomorrow, what will we be like? And we'll look at a few things of what we will be doing as well. We can know in general terms what we will be like in the resurrection because the Bible tells us that we will be like the resurrected Jesus. Turn to 1 Corinthians 15 and 47, if you will. Verse 47 of 1 Corinthians 15. And we'll look at a couple verses here. The first man is of earth, made of dust. The second man is the Lord of heaven. And drop down to verse 49. And as we have borne the image of the earthly, we should also bear the image of the heavenly man. We have a tremendous future. We are going to be like Christ. Now think on that for a moment. How would you like being just like Jesus Christ? Isn't that an interesting thought? We're not that now. Most of the images that we'll think about, we can't comprehend the greatness and what the glory of Jesus Christ is. But we can glean the Bible and we can get a good idea of what we will be like in the millennium. So we learned that in the resurrection we will take on the same image or likeness that Christ has. We will. So today I want to give a brief look at what it would be like to be a spirit being and what our job as a spirit being will be. I gear this mostly to the younger people because it gives them hope. You know, being a younger person many, many years ago, many years ago. Of course, I tell everybody I'm only 39 and holding. Well, I put that holding in there. I've been holding for 35 or 36 years. But, I find that the younger people are encouraged by something like this because it gives them hope. And what better time to talk about this subject than the Feast of Tabernacles? Paul tells us that true Christians will share the likeness of a son who is the eldest among a large family of brothers. Notice Romans chapter 8. Turn, please, to Book of Romans chapter 8. And I'm glad I have 3/4 of an hour. Or is it an hour? I forget. Mr. McCoy said, make it 20 minutes because your 20 minutes will go into 35 minutes anyway. Notice Romans chapter 8. We'll look at verse 29. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. The Greek word for conformed here is sumorphos. S-U-M-M-O-R-P-H-O-S. And it means to be jointly formed. It means to be similar, conformed to or fashioned like unto. I have 4 thoughts on this subject I'd like to share with you this morning. The first thought is that we will be like Jesus and share his likeness. Think on that for a moment. How would you like right now to share his likeness? Well, that's not to be right now, but we will in the future. we will be like Jesus and share his likeness. Though Christ has eternally existed, we have not. We have not. He's eternal. We have not. And we will be elevated to a plane so high that we are called the children of God and the brothers of Jesus Christ. We are called the children of God. We have that title right now. We're the children of God. The Apostle John confirms these truths, that we will be the children of God with the same glorified form as Jesus Christ. Look at 1 John chapter 3, if you will. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1. Guess I should look at this clock. 1 John 3, 1. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the children of God. Think on that for a moment. You know, my children were little and they were in school in second, third, fourth grade. You know, children can be very harsh toward each other. And if you're slightly different in any form, any manner, they pick on you. And we would go over these scriptures and tell them, yes, yes, they do that. They have a tendency to do that because you're different, you see, because you're called the children of God. You have a different philosophy. You have a different outlook. You have different goals. They have no goals for the most part, but you do. You know what's in the future for you. So, verse 2. So in verse 2, we read this. He says this, Beloved, now we are the children of God. Now we are the children of God. We're special people. We're called out ones. As the Bible tells us, we're a chosen generation. Now we are the children of God, and it does not yet appear what we shall be. I used to tell my kids, it does not yet appear what we shall be. Shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, Jesus Christ comes back, we're changed into our glorified form, we shall be like him. We shall be like Jesus Christ, for we shall see him as he is. We will possess a glory that's so great as to be compared to the glory of Christ, though we will never be equal. Yes, we'll have his likeness, we'll have his glory, but we'll never be equal. There'll always be a chain of command. Father, God the Father, Jesus Christ, and then the brothers of Christ. That's us. We are the children of God right now. Romans 8, verse 16. The Spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. In verse 17, these are memory scriptures. You all should know this. There'll be a test. Verse 17, and if children, then heirs. Heirs. Now, what's an heir? You know, if you had a grandmother, grandfather, perhaps had a lot of money or a lot of property or a large estate of some sort, and you were named in the will, you would be an heir. Go down to mom and dad and then down to you, perhaps. You would be an heir. And if children, then heirs. Heirs of God. Think on that for a moment. The things that you are going to inherit at that time when Jesus Christ returns. That's what these days picture. Pictures the time when we talk about the Feast of Trumpets, the return of Jesus Christ, and atonement, when we're all at one with God, and then the Feast of Tabernacles, where we will begin to set up the kingdom. We will inherit all things at that time. Joint heirs with Christ. If so, that we suffer with him, so that we may be also glorified together. Isn't that interesting thought? Doesn't that give you encouragement? And I say to the young people, hang in there. Hang in there. It's tough out there in school. You go to high school, junior high school perhaps, or high school. It's tough. It's tough coming out, graduating, coming out of high school, looking for a job, and there's no jobs out there. You know, it's tough. It's a tough economy right now. But hang in there. Because God has something for you to do, something for you to inherit. You're heirs with Jesus Christ. Isn't that a wonderful thought? Verse 18, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Let those bullies say nasty things to you. Let them comment negatively to you. But you know that there's a time coming that you're going to be glorified, and you will have an opportunity in the world tomorrow, that's what these days picture, to teach them. The second resurrection will set up the kingdom, and then they will be resurrected, and you have the opportunity. Young people, you have the opportunity to teach. You will teach them God's ways. It's important that you hang in. It's what he's saying here, that the suffering of today isn't worthy to be compared with that which you're going to get in the future. The second thought I have, we will have the glory just like Christ. We will have the glory just like Christ. What is the glory of Christ like? During his physical ministry on earth, he gave three of his disciples a preview of his appearance in a glorified state. You remember that story? Found in Matthew chapter 17 and verse 1. Matthew 17 and verse 1. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and brought them up into a high mountain. So he took these three men, and they went up into a high mountain and was transfigured before them. He showed them his glory. And his face did shine as the sun, and his clothing was white as the light. Now here the three apostles had the opportunity to see Jesus Christ in his glorified form. We have not seen Jesus Christ in our glorified form, but this gives us the promise that someday we will. You young people, you hang in there because you're going to become just like Christ and you're going to have the same image. Here he's transfigured himself before them and his face did shine as the sun and his clothing was white as light. Years later at the writing of the book of Revelation, John saw a vision of the resurrected, glorified Christ. Let's notice how John describes this, his awesome appearance. Turn, please, to the book of Revelation, chapter 1, and we'll look at this. Start in verse 14. Got a couple of verses here, verse 14 and 15. And his hair, and his head, and his hair was white as like wool, and white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire. And his feet were like unto fine bronze, as if they burned in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. John had this privilege of seeing the glorified Christ. This language describes Christ, the glorified Son of God, as being of great brilliance. We too will share that dazzling appearance. After his resurrection, Jesus had the ability to take on the appearance that he had when he existed in the flesh. He could manifest himself as a fleshly human being. You're going to have that honor too and a pleasure in the world tomorrow when it's at the second resurrection to manifest yourself to the people that you've known, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But here we see that Jesus had the ability to take on the appearance that he had when he existed in the flesh. After he rose from the garden tomb, Mary Magdalene visited the grave. Remember that story? When she saw that the tomb was empty, she began to weep. John chapter 20, verse 11. John chapter 20, verse 11. But Mary stood outside the sepulchre weeping, and as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre. And when she had thus spoke, she turned back and saw Jesus standing, but did not know it was Jesus. She saw him standing there, or a figure, or a man standing there, but she didn't know it was Jesus. Verse 15, Jesus said to her, "Woman, why do you weep? Why do you seek? Or whom do you seek?" She, supposing him to be the gardener, said unto him, "Surely if you had borne him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." She did not recognize him. She thought he was the gardener. So Jesus appeared to Mary as a normal human being rather than in his radiant state. You're going to have that opportunity as well. In the second resurrection, when you see these people come up to teach them, you can manifest yourself as a human being and teach them as well. Jesus appeared to Mary as a normal human being. On another occasion, Jesus appeared from nowhere inside a closed room where his disciples were meeting. in John chapter 20, 26. Well, drop down to, you're in chapter 20, drop down to verse 26. You can imagine these people in this room, and all of a sudden, someone appears. Shake you up a little bit, wouldn't it? After 8 days, again, his disciples were inside, and Thomas with them. And then came Jesus, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, "Peace be unto you." So here we see that after his resurrection, Jesus was able to pass through solid walls, solid barriers. He was able to do that, such as the walls of a building or the stone enclosure of his tomb. Like Jesus, when we are changed to spirit, we will not be limited by the laws that govern physical things. We will have that ability. God will give us bodies that will never tire. Do you ever get tired at the end of the day? Anybody? All of us, right? Especially as you get older. As members of God's family, we will have bodies just like God. Never tire. Never run out of energy. Notice Isaiah chapter 40 and 28, verse 28. Isaiah 40, 28. I look forward to that, although being a young man and holding. Always say that I'm holding. So, been holding for 35 years at least. Isaiah 40, 28, have you not known, have you not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, nor is weary? Can you imagine what it's like to have a mind that doesn't get tired, that you're like that every minute, every day, 24/7? Faints not, neither is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. You're going to have perfect understanding. And you young people, when you go to school or go to college, wherever you may be, and these people sneer and snicker at you and tell you all kinds of things that's not very complimentary, keep that in mind. You know, that you're going to have a mind that's beyond understanding. That's going to be excellent, how should I say, full of knowledge. You'll know everything, and you'll know from where these remarks come from. Human nature, isn't it? Your people, your peers, your friends are jealous. I come to that conclusion right away when I went into high school, that they came up to me on one or two occasions and downright insulted me. And I found out later it was because they were jealous of me. Why be jealous of me? I'm nobody. But they were jealous. So you pick these people pick on you for these various things. So don't let that deter you. You're going to be just like Christ. You're going to have a perfect body. Doesn't wear out. And there's no searching of your understanding as well. You'll never grow old. How many of us are growing old? Don't raise your hands. But you'll never grow old. Your body will be the same. You'll stay the same. You'll never get ill. You'll never become ill. You'll never become sick. You look at the prayer requests that are sent out each week. A lot of people are sick. A lot of people are ill. That'll never happen as a spirit being. Because you know how to take care of your body. Of course, you'll be a spirit being. Our minds will be just like the mind of Jesus Christ. It's amazing. Never grow old. Never get sick. Never get tired. Never get weary. Our minds will be just like the mind of Jesus Christ. And I tell people when they talk to me, they say, you know, I don't know if God hears my prayer. Maybe he's not listening, they say. Oh, yeah, he's listening. You can call on God 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You'll never get a hang-up, never get a busy signal, never get a "I'll call you back" or voicemail. He's there for you. Young people, I know that's hard to think on, but, you know, that's true. It's very true. God listens. He'll hear you at any time, at any moment. Never think that he left the office to get a cup of coffee, you know, like I do. We tend to think sometimes in terms of our own mortality. See, we get tired, we go get a cup of coffee, and we leave the office. No, God's there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all the time, night and day. Doesn't matter when you call on him, he's there. He'll listen. And so will Jesus Christ, and we'll have that type of mind. We'll have that type of mind. With the ability to simply materialize, we will not be subject to the restrictions that our physical bodies have, and wouldn't that be great? I like to run up and down steps 20 years ago. Now I have difficulty going up 3 or 4 steps fast. I go up slow. So your body changes as you get older. This will never happen. You will never be subject to the restrictions that our physical bodies have. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 43, it is sown in dishonor, it's raised in glory, and it's sown in weakness. Isn't that describing our bodies at this particular time? It is raised in power, the resurrection. Raised in power. Verse 44 of 1 Corinthians 15, it's sown a natural body, it's raised a spiritual body. There's a natural body and there's a spiritual body. There's two types of bodies, natural body and spiritual body. Right now we have a natural body. But at that time, when Jesus Christ returns, you will have a spiritual body. Think on that for a moment. Isn't that wonderful? It's great news. When we enter that new life, we'll be endowed with unlimited energy. Wow, limited energy. As members of God's family, we will be empowered by God's Holy Spirit. His Spirit. As part of this change, we will not need to eat to survive. Think on that for a moment. You don't have to eat. But apparently, we'll have the option of eating for pleasure and fellowship if we choose. And there's a couple of examples I'll just bring to your attention. In two of his post-resurrection appearances, he shared a meal with his disciples. In Luke 24, verses 28-30, talking about the road to Emmaus, which we heard about the other day. And in John chapter 21, beginning in verse 1, the fish. Jesus was on shore, apostles were out trying to catch fish, and he told them to throw the net on the other side. He did, and he brought all this fish back, and they had a bonfire, cooked the fish, and Jesus ate a meal with them. So you're able to do that if you want to. But you don't have to stop at McDonald's, you see. You won't need to eat. You won't need to eat. Just picture that for a moment. Your bodies will have full energy and you won't need to eat. Third thing I'm thinking on here and a thought I want to give you is, what will we be doing as spirit beings? Now, we touched on this with the other sermons a little bit, so I'll overlap. Forgive me if I overlap on some of these scriptures, but this is something that I feel very strong on. A spirit being in God's family, we will live and work at the highest possible level and environment. You'll be given a job. The microphone went off. The microphone went off. The speaker went off. Oh. As spirit beings in God's family, I'll just speak a little louder then. Can you hear me now? Okay, I'll speak a little louder. Notice what Jesus said in the book of John. John chapter 17, verse 13. This is life eternal. As spirit being in God's family, this is life eternal. This is our hope, especially for you young people just growing up, just starting out in life. This is your hope, that they might know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom you have sent. We will spend eternity with God in his environment. Everything you see around you is going to be changed. It's going to be different. This is all temporary. Everything will be different. We will not sit idle in our new life. We will be positively occupied. We will be busy. Jesus Christ said in John 5:17, my Father still works and I work. We're not going to float around on the cloud like most people do with the belief that you're going to go to heaven. You know, I had one person tell me that many years ago. I said, that would be fine as long as I have a Lincoln Town Car to float around in. I since found out we're not going to heaven, and that was many, many, many years ago. And I thought that was kind of funny, so I threw that in. Anyway, we will be positively occupied. We will have a job to do. When Jesus Christ returns to establish the kingdom on earth, those in the first resurrection will serve as judges. Revelation 20 and verse 4. And I saw thrones, and they that sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, who had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, nor had received his mark on their foreheads or in their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. That's what these days picture. 1,000-year millennium. Feast of Tabernacles. Notice verse 6. Blessed and holy is he that has a part in the first resurrection. See the hope? I used to instill this on my children when they were little. This very verse. Blessed and holy is he that has a part in the first resurrection. There's hope there. You know, you go to school each day, you know, and these people pick on you maybe, or maybe you have a bad day or something. And just keep this in mind. It's encouraging. It'll get you through a day. On such, a second death has no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ. You're going to be kings and priests. And shall reign with him 1,000 years. We will not go to heaven to live passively and idly. You know, that's not going to happen. But we're going to reign with him 1,000 years. The final thought. In our spiritual bodies, we will help Christ bring about a change for the better. A change for the better. Jesus will return to a world that has largely destroyed itself by living in opposition to the commands of his Creator. Yes, look around. Is it getting any better? You know, we're told in the Bible that creation groans for the manifestation of the sons of God. Creation. Give man a few more years and it'll totally wipe everything out and destroy everything. If it wasn't for the intervention of God, man will destroy himself. He will teach the people, that is Jesus Christ, when he returns, to teach the people to obey God's law. He will begin a massive reproduction process to help people unlearn their old ways of doing things and for the first time learn to do things God's way. When we set up the millennium, there will be some people left over that will come into the millennium at that time. They need to be taught. It's going to take 200 or 300 years, perhaps, to get the world under control because there'll be so much to do, so much restoration to be done. And we're going to do it. You young people are going to help. You're going to be kings and priests along with us. Turn to Isaiah chapter 2. I think the floor opens up if I go too long. Isaiah chapter 2. Look at 2 through 4. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and there shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways. You are going to be there to teach these people that come in through the millennium, those that are coming over from what was left of the destruction in the world at that time, and you're going to teach them. All the people that are born in the millennium, you're going to teach them. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. In verse 4, and he shall judge between nations. Now, when it says he, is talking about Jesus, but you see, you're going to be part of it because you're going to be kings and priests reigning with Christ. You're going to be there with him, helping him, guiding these people during the millennium. And thereafter, too, just figure the second resurrection, the work that needs to be done there. He shall judge between the nations, and they shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation. Neither shall they learn war anymore. Wow. Peace at last. At that time, Christ will teach all peoples who have not known God's way. Yes, it's going to set up a new world. Everything's going to be different. and we have been called to be part of that. He will be assisted by all who are changed into glorified sons of God in the resurrection, of his return. All of us that are changed will have a part in this. Help Jesus Christ. Yes, reigning with Christ. That's our ultimate future. We will help bring about worldwide peace. We will assist in spreading the knowledge of God to the most distant lands in a re-education process that will span the globe. Not just something in one nation, not in one area, but will span the globe. So you begin to see the massive job that we have ahead of us as spirit beings, children of God. Isaiah 11:6. We're all familiar with this. We had this on our plaque many years ago under our former affiliation. 11:6, Isaiah 11:6. The wolf shall also dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with a kid, and a calf, and a young lion, and the fatling together. Can't do that now. So their nature's going to be changed. And a little child shall lead them. And a cow and a bear shall feed, and a young one shall lie down together, and a lion shall eat straw like the ox. Yes, we're going to have a part in that. Changing the nature of animals. Changing the nature. Verse 8, and the nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the adder's den. Well, the asp is a snake. It's an Egyptian cobra snake, and it's very poisonous. The adders is an animal similar to the asp. It's only about a foot long. And it's more venomous than the asp. But a child shall play over the hole of the asp and the adder's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, and the waters cover the sea. Wow. What a child that's going to be. But that's our destiny. In verse 10, and in that day there shall be a root of Jesse who shall stand as an ensign of the people. To it shall the Gentiles seek. They'll come to you. Not like today with snide remarks, things to say to make you feel bad, but they'll come to you and say, I want to learn God's way. You have something I need. I want you to show me. And his place of rest shall be glorious. Now, having said all of this, what does it mean to you and me? What does this mean to us? The Bible has an application to us everywhere. Simply this, we live in the here and now. Hard to think of these things when you go home and back in your environment. These things will come about at the return of Jesus Christ. All of these things God has in store for us at a time in the near future, in the kingdom. The question is, do you want to be there? Do you want to be there? Before all these things come to pass, there is something we must do. Something we must do. And that simply is this. We need to take all that we learn here at the Feast of Tabernacles. Yes, our notes, fellowship comments. And the Sabbath services doesn't end at the feast. When the feast ends, your Sabbath services. We need to take all this information and begin to apply all these things to our lives. We need to do that. We need to make ourselves ready now. We must do it now, or we simply won't be there. Think on that for a moment. God wants you to be there. He has everything available for you to be a success, to make it into the kingdom. We must do it now, though. How important it is. Is it? Well, we look around and we see the world closing in on us. It's very important. It's very important that we establish a relationship with Jesus Christ and God the Father. It's that important. Why? So we can be assured that we will be in his kingdom. Just knowing all these things is not enough. It's book knowledge. Persecution is coming. We need to be living like Jesus Christ lived. We need to be following his example. I'll close with one scripture now. 1 Corinthians 11. Verse 1, I feel the platform getting ready to open up. 1 Corinthians 11:1, be followers of me even as I also am of Christ. Follow me as I follow Christ. In other words, the Apostle Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. I'm going to turn, if you would, to 1 Peter 2:20. I said that was the last one. This will be the last one. I promise this will be the last one. 2 Peter 2. First Peter, I'm sorry. That's why it's not coming to me. First Peter. 1 Peter 2:21. We'll go back up to verse 19. For this is commendable, if because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. Suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it when you are beaten with your faults, you take it patiently, but when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. We have to take the knowledge that we're learning here and apply it in our lives, and we have to go out there and, as an example, let our light shine regardless of what happens to us. You young people, yes, you'll start out in life, and people will say some evil things about you in this society, but you need to realize, you know, God has a plan for you. And you're included in this fantastic plan that was revealed through the Feast of Tabernacles in your future. So, it says here, but when you do good and suffer, in other words, you set that example, set that light, even though people ridicule you. This is commendable before the Lord. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, in verse 21, leaving us an example, that you should follow his steps. Well, I have to put a period here. Much more could be said. Could go on for hours, but I have to stop. My time is up. Difficult times are ahead of us. Make no doubt of that. Prophecy marches on. But there's beyond all of that, God's sending Jesus Christ back, and the kingdom will be set up. And that's what we're picturing here at the Feast of Tabernacles. But we must make ourselves ready. We must do that. We must start now.